We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Redskins looking to come from behind against the Ravens. This for the win. The Redskins, in overtime, have defeated the Ravens.
That's how it ended 8 years ago, the last time the Ravens played at FedEx Field. It was one of those games that's hard to forget, as Washington won it 31-28 in overtime. Of course, the memorable play from that game back in 2012 was the Haloti Ngata hit on Robert Griffin III that started really the downfall of that particular brief, fleeting, meteoric rise and moment in franchise history. It's a Friday. It's a football Friday. I'm here. Cooley is joining us as well. He was there that day. What do you remember about that day and that game?
And that your stepson was really, really good.
You didn't play at all. My stepson didn't play at all.
Not me.
Oh, Kirk. Oh, you remember? Well, remember the woman at that hotel in New York who thought that I was your son, that you were my son, excuse me. Yeah, and that I was your father, which, you know, we put her at ease pretty quickly. I told her, no, there's not that much of a difference. Certainly, maturity, there's a difference, but everything else is much closer than you would think. Anyway, so my stepson, Kirk Cousins, that's what you remember from that game, Kirk coming in and playing well?
What's funny is when you look back at the stats of that game, I remember Kirk coming in playing really well. I think he completed like two throws.
That's
they were
it.
Both huge. They were just both big throws.
Yeah, they were.
No, we were all at that point. Everyone was excited for Kirk. Nobody thought Kirk was in there to take a job. Kirk was just this fun-loving guy that yelled, "You like that?" when he completed throws and
no,
in
he practice didn't.
Or booyah. No, he yelled booyah every time he completed booyah. And what was the other thing Kirk did that was funny when it came in? Any huddle, when you started the huddle,
yeah,
like a normal quarter would get in and say, "All right, we got double right, 18 outside." Kirk would start with team, double right, 18. He'd always start with team, like he was addressing the huddle. It's a team.
Well, let's move off of Kirk, because people are going to think we're sucking up to Kirk, which is typically my move, and I understand that. But this was, he came in and he threw the touchdown pass to Garcon and had the quarterback draw on the 2-point conversion after Griffin got hurt. But the thing about that ending is, after Ngata knocked Griffin out of the game, remember, Griffin came back in. He came back in despite the fact that he had not been cleared, and Shanahan was sort of blamed for it, but Shanahan said, "Andrews is over there. I'm coaching the game. Andrews just, you know, put his hands up and as if to say, I don't know, I guess it's all right that he goes back in." And then Griffin got injured again. He was hobbling around, and they won the game. Richard Crawford's punt return in overtime, I really remember that in particular, that set up the game-winning field goal by Forbath that we played coming into the show. But it was the fourth win in a row. Remember, coming off the bye week, when Shanahan essentially, you know, at least publicly said that, you know, we're going to start playing to see who wants to be on this team next year. You came out of that bye week. You guys smoked Philadelphia. You beat Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. You beat the Giants. And then the Ravens were 9-3 on that day coming in. But you guys were back in the hunt for first place in the playoffs, which was amazing. And you pulled off that win. And then the next week was the Cleveland game. You know, we've all documented that many times. Griffin working out before, convincing Snyder that he could play. Snyder going to Shanahan saying, Robert's ready to play. Mike saying to Dan, well, he's not playing. He wasn't cleared by the doctors. You know, and Snyder pleading, and Griffin then really distressed that Shanahan wouldn't play him that day, so much so that after a win and an impressive performance by Cousins, Griffin held his own press conference after a game he didn't play in. And we should have known then that something was up. We wouldn't find out about all the shit that was going on behind the scenes until much later. But he came back the following week. You guys went to the playoffs, and then obviously the Seattle game is the game that everybody remembers from that year. But that Baltimore game was incredible. It was such a great and entertaining game. I was saying this morning, Cooley, it was damp. It was December. There was a fog rolling in at the end of a 1 o'clock game as it's starting to get dark. And it was just, it was a big win. It was a huge win.
Yeah, it was a big win. In all fairness, Kevin, that was a great season for a lot of Redskins fans. That was an awful season for me.
I know
it was. Hated it. And looking back, it was selfish to look back on it in the way I am now. But I do, you know, I had got released early in that season. Fred Davis got hurt. I signed again, and I thought I was going to be playing. And no one would really tell me why they wouldn't play me. And so I just rode the bench, man.
Yeah,
it was a hard season for me to sit and watch. Obviously, I wasn't the same. I mean, if I was, they would have played me, but I didn't even get a chance to be in games. I didn't. So me looking back, I just look back week in, week out. I remember certain weeks where I was like, today's going to be the best practice squad day, the best look squad day of all time. So that was really hard. That was a hard year for me.
You played, statistically, it says you played in 9 games. You had 1 reception for 8 yards.
It's just in general a tough year. Kevin, I can self-loathe all I want. Not happy looking back on it now. I was very upset with it when it was. And so for me to be in the moment with the team, it just didn't quite exist for me that year.
Now, I can imagine on most teams when guys, especially veteran players that came back with the expectation of playing and you're not, it's got to be frustrating. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this over the years. Like, this whole idea that everybody's, you know, team first, I mean, that's a nice, you know, nice, pleasant way to think about the world and about sports. But we all know this. Like, if you're in a company and the company's having success, but you're not contributing at the level that you want to, I mean, you're not completely happy. It's only a human reaction. But, you know, one of the things that you did say to me about that year, and you've said to me in the past, is you did, you know, enjoy watching the Shanahans put together that offense for Griffin.
Well, I appreciated it.
Yeah.
I was certainly impressed by it. And at that point in my career, I was enamored with football and scheme. And so I was very interested and involved in all the meetings and everything we were doing. Like, I didn't check out by any means. I went and practiced hard. I mean, I went and said, I'm going to have the best day of practice ever. But by Sunday, I was not a happy guy.
Right.
And then you look the next, after the game, it was like, okay, well, let's go home. I don't even know if I need a shower today.
Yeah.
Here was the hardest thing for me, because I'm a pretty aware person. I knew that after the injury, getting cut, getting signed back, and then them not playing me when they essentially looked like they had to have me, just showed every other team in the NFL that I was done.
Right.
Now, some more to that. I'm glad that I was done after that. And I didn't want to be. I wanted to play. I wanted to come back after it. I'd probably have a new knee if I'd played 2 more years.
Right. Well, your knee's still not right.
No, I had like an arthritis attack yesterday or something, or 2 days ago. I can't even hardly walk right now. It's weird.
That's lovely. All right.
Go away.
All right. Let's get to we're going to get to Washington beats Baltimore if here in one moment. I just wanted to mention one thing. I know you did not watch the Thursday night game, and maybe a lot of you that are listening didn't watch it. But there was a moment at the end of the game that if Ron Rivera were watching, and Ron Rivera, by the way, not, you know, he missed practice yesterday or left practice early. Del Rio saying he does expect Rivera to coach on Sunday, but he went, he was feeling the effects of a chemo treatment. So we certainly wish coach well. But at the end of the game, Cooley, I'll give you the quick sort of setup. All right. The Broncos are up 37-28. The Jets have the ball with a minute 48 to go. And they've got three timeouts left, and they're down 9 points. They had actually failed at midfield before the touchdown in a two-point game. They did have the lead at one point in the fourth quarter. Anyway, they go 4 and out, all right, and they turn the ball over to Denver after using one of their timeouts with a minute 3 left in the game. Denver's got the ball in Jet territory, up 37-28, 1 minute 3 seconds left in the game. The Jets have two timeouts left. Now, the Jets were intent on calling the timeouts, their final two timeouts, even though if you do the quick math on this, a couple of kneel downs and a couple of timeouts and then 40 seconds, the best that the Jets will do is get the ball back with about 13 to 14 seconds left in the game, needing two scores. I've seen many teams bail at that point. And it would be fine if they had bailed at that point, because really you're talking about the miracle of all miracles to get the ball back with 13 seconds left and needing to score twice from 70 yards out. Anyway, so Brett Rypien kneels, Jets call a timeout with 59 seconds left. Second down, Brett Rypien takes a knee, and the Jets use their final timeout. There are now 57 seconds left. Third down, Brett Rypien takes a knee, and as I just described, they end up taking a delay of game before their fourth down snap. The Jets didn't have any timeouts left after that, with 13 seconds left. Now, on this fourth down, Vic Fangio decides to tell his offense to try to burn the 13 seconds by dropping Rypien back and having him throw a deep ball down the right sideline that isn't, you know, they're not trying to score. It's going to go out of bounds, but it'll lead up, you know, 6-7 seconds, and then the Jets will have one play. Personally, I think one more knee, you know, maybe a couple of steps back, kneel down with 9-8 seconds left, and it's over anyway. The Jets would have to score in less than 8 seconds and then recover an onside kick with a 15-yard penalty to extend the game to have a chance for a field goal. Like, I mean, something that's never happened before. Anyway, by dropping back and throwing, Rypien throws a ball, there was a defensive offside play. And so now there are 7 seconds left, and it's fourth down again. And he drops Rypien back again with 7 seconds left. Now one more knee is game. Even if the Jets score on the final play of the game, it's over. But he drops Rypien back again and has him throw a deep ball down the right sideline. And Greg Williams clearly instructed his defense to go after Rypien and knock his block off. That was such a boomer way of describing it.
Not just block off.
Yeah, so McClendon comes in, goes helmet to helmet with Rypien, 15-yard penalty, 3 seconds left in the game. Fangio is incensed. Rypien takes a knee on the first down play after the 15-yard penalty, and Fangio instructs his team not to shake hands and to go off the field. And he's pointing at Adam Gase on his way off the field like, you asshole, for doing what you did. Well, to be honest with you, I think Fangio was an idiot for dropping Rypien back, especially with 7 seconds to go. Like, that was stupid, too. So I put some of the blame on him for allowing that to happen. But you know, the Jets, with really the miracle of all miracles as a possibility with 57 seconds left, they were still taking timeouts. And I was thinking last night, Rivera's probably saying, see, that's why you don't call timeouts, because you could end up getting somebody hurt like with a late hit and the game can turn ugly. Well, the it's an apples to oranges comparison. But anyway, that's how the game ended last night.
I saw the ending of the game, and then I saw Adam Gase afterwards, and ultimately, Gase is right now not in an R&D mode.
No.
He's in an SYJ mode.
Yeah.
So any possible chance of winning the game that they played pretty well in and they scored some points against the Broncos, they got to try to win a game.
Yeah, agreed.
The Jets came out and said there's, you know, they're not planning on firing Gaze anytime soon, whatever. Look, if you look at it, Greg Williams did a great job taking over in Cleveland a couple years ago. I would like Greg Williams to take over right now.
Me too.
If I was the Jets.
Totally.
He would
agree.
Take over right now. And if there was any chance to save any kind of a season, which is probably not, but you never know in that division.
Well, the Titans, what do you mean in that division? Really, what do you mean?
The Titans and Colts both look really good.
No, the Jets are in the AFC East.
Why am I thinking the Jets are? That's,
yeah.
Still waking up here.
Yeah, it's okay.
9:30. Wyoming. No, that division, they're out of it. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Last.
Bills, Pats. The Jets are done.
Last thing before we get to Washington wins if. J.P. Finley wrote a story this morning that he's got sources that tell him that Ron Rivera and some other Washington football coaches met with Dwayne Haskins this week to make clear that he understands he needs to play better or things could soon change. What do you make of that? This sort of goes hand in hand with the Monday morning wake up. He's looked at tape of Dwayne. He's looked at tape of the defense. He's checked out the standings.
Here's the first thing I make out of it. Ron Rivera has been brought in to change the culture. And in one of the biggest things with the culture is leaking inside things to the media.
Yep.
So Rivera fires a lot of people who he thinks possibly could possibly leak things. He's proud to make all these changes where it's going to be team. It's going to be inside. And in week three, we now have two reports on what's going on with Dwayne Haskins. And all credit to JP. I have no problem with what JP's doing. But that meeting that happened with Dwayne Haskins, in my opinion, is a stays in this building meeting.
Yeah.
Period. That's to me something that I would put on the coaching staff that should never, ever, ever come out. Unless it was Dwayne, and then they have to talk to Dwayne about it, which I doubt it was, because why would Dwayne want to share that information? Unless it was Dwayne, man, that was what they came here and said they wouldn't do.
It's a really good point. Do you know, yesterday, Tommy and I had a conversation where I said to Tommy, you know, one of the things that I've really, and it was off of talking about Haskins' presser on Wednesday and how I thought, you know, he handled himself pretty well. And I said, look, there's a bit of a culture change going on that we can identify right now. And that is, there haven't been leaks. You know, there's been a public challenging of Dwayne in the summer with, you know, the leadership from the coach and, you know, a bit of a public challenging, but there haven't been leaks this year. And that's a good thing. And here we go. 24 hours after mentioning that to Tommy, you've got a leak on this. And to your point, this is a total stays here, doesn't leave the building conversation. Unless you buy the conversation that Ron Rivera shared with somebody, I'm forgetting who, Tommy brought it up to me yesterday, and I do remember it, where Rivera said he talked to Urban Meyer at one point, and Urban Meyer said the way to get through to Dwayne is to publicly challenge him. But this is not, if he wanted to publicly challenge him, he could have publicly said it himself rather than having it leaked.
And to me, that's a difference, because the coaches met with Dwayne. So you're assuming it's Scott Turner and Ron Rivera and whoever else on offense, maybe three guys. So yeah. who talked to J.P. Finley?
I have no idea.
And now you leave it arbitrary to who maybe discussed that meeting. I'm with you. If you stand up as the head coach, or if you let Scott Turner stand up in his presser as the offensive coordinator and say, nothing's for sure here. We are about competition and we need Dwayne to play better. Then it's not a leak. I guess it's not that far from that, but if you want publicly challenged, don't make him read a story that says it was discussed in a meeting. That just hurts trust.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know what, this report essentially creates the fan and media countdown on Dwayne. Maybe, and if that was done specifically for that purpose, well, they've achieved it. Because now we know that things could change soon.
Well, the other part of this in the what they construe as the constructive part is maybe Dwayne doesn't know that he needs to play better unless they say it publicly. Now, I disagree with how they said it publicly because I would just say it as the coach. But maybe they left that meeting and he continued to say, look, I did do a bunch of really good things in the game. I got the bat, though. No problem on that. I get it. But I did so many good things. I am getting better. And they're like, nope. The bad, we got to talk about more. The good was limited. The bad, we got to – maybe that was their only outlet. Again, I disagree with the way they used the outlet, but you think about that as it is. I'm with them. I understand that you might have a moment here in the next 2 weeks where you have to go win this division. But they're going to be 1-4 after Sunday, or 1-3.
1-3, yeah.
And if Dallas were to really flounder, then it becomes interesting. They're probably going to be 1-4 after they play the Rams. And then you get a game with the Giants. That, to me, is his last opportunity if he doesn't play well and you lose to the Giants.
All right.
But then at that point, you're sitting there saying, didn't play well, we lost the Giants, we're 1-5. What are we really doing here? Let's let him keep rolling.
Yeah, it's 24 hours ago, I was complimenting the organization on no leaks this year. And I don't know what the goal was here, and I don't know if there was a goal. But I think this is not good. This isn't good. You know, look, it's possible that we were in countdown mode anyway on Dwayne. Some people were, but this just makes it official, in my view.
I still believed, and I think you did until this point. I even still believe now, because I just don't see him as a playoff team. And even if they are, unless he gets dynamically better throughout the year, and that's the only way they could win a game in the playoffs. Is he the centerpiece of the offense or not? And can we find that out in 4, 5, 6 games? Because I don't think you can.
It's going to be interesting because you know what? On Sunday, my expectation is now that if they're down 23-14 with 2.5 minutes to go and Baltimore's facing a 3rd-and-9 and the clock's running, they'll call timeout. I think he'll do it this Sunday. I think you're going to see more of an urgency to try to win the game. If they probably won't have that opportunity. I'm just saying if they do.
Well, if he understands in any way, shape, or form that he's got to go win this division, and he does because he discussed it, then you got to find a way to hopefully win a game at the end of a game.
Yeah.
You got to hopefully pull one out. And for everything that we've criticized Dwayne about, he doesn't have any quit. He gets better when his back's against the wall.
I agree with that.
I'm not going to say that he becomes Joe Montana with his back against the wall. But he makes more throws when his back's against the wall. He has since the first game that he played here.
Right. All right. Let's get to Washington wins if right after this word from one of our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Sunday, 1 p.m., FedEx Field. Baltimore, by the way, cooling now a 14-point favorite. It shot up yesterday for some reason. I'm assuming pretty sharp money on the Ravens to bounce back off that Monday night loss to the Chiefs and pound Washington on Sunday, especially given that, you know, Ioannidis is gone for the year. More likely than not, no Chase Young. By the way, Terry McLaurin ended up on the injury report yesterday with a thigh. He had limited participation in practice. But let's get started. Washington wins if. Go ahead.
They score on defense.
They score on defense, okay?
Lamar Jackson fumbles or throws a pick, and they end up scoring on defense. And in part, I still think that you give up less than – you give up 24 points or less and score on defense. So you create a number where the offense has to score 17 points. To me – that's it. If you can hold Baltimore to 17, which I think is going to be really tough. They're a team that scores 30 points a game.
Yeah.
They're an explosive offensive team. They can make any play anywhere on the field with the dynamic offense. But I think if you hold them to 24 and score on defense, to me, that's a chance for them to win a ball game.
All right, my first one is Washington wins, pulls a massive upset off. If they slow down Baltimore's rush attack. I thought, and you made the point, that they did a pretty good job on first down. This is a team in Baltimore last year, not as much this year, but we know that how capable they are of running the football dynamically with a lot of zone read, a lot of quarterback runs, and their chunk runs too, man, with Ingram and Edwards, and now also with J.K. Dobbins. And there's a lot of second and twos. There's a lot of, you know, second and threes. It's got to be second and six, second and seven. They've got to have some opportunity to put them into third down and throwing situations. It's the only way you're going to get Baltimore off the field is to make him feel like he's got to throw from the pocket on third and eight. I don't think it's possible that they can do it. I am excited and very intrigued by the matchup because I do believe in this defensive front. Now, it won't have Chase Young, but whether it's this year or next year or the year after, I think it's going to end up being a dominant run-stopping and pass-rushing defensive front. And I'm excited about watching, you know, it evolve here over the next year to 3 years. I thought they did a good job against Kyler Murray at times early in the game. I think they did a good job against Chubb and Hunt on first downs early in the game. I think there were plays made by Allen and Payne and the front four where you saw guys get swallowed up at the line of scrimmage and there wasn't much running room. Now, eventually Cleveland wore them down. Eventually the 80 plays in Arizona wore Washington's defense down, but Baltimore averages 5.7 yards per carry. And before the game last week, Cleveland averaged, you know, in the high fives per carry as well. If, you know, do the math at 5.7 yards per carry, if they reach their average, they're just going to run it right down their throat and it's going to be 38-10. So they have to slow down Baltimore's rush attack, especially in early downs, first down situations, so that you create the opportunity potentially for Baltimore to have third in a throwing situation. If you don't stop the run, if you don't slow it down, you've got no chance in this game. What's next for you?
Well, as a part of that, Baltimore really has the best backfield in the NFL.
Because of the quarterback.
Because of the quarterback, who has 32 carries through three games. He's averaging over 10 carries a game. 10.
Yeah.
You know who their leading rusher is? It's Lamar Jackson. He averages 5.6 yards per carry. He's got like 180 yards. Ingram is still at 4.4, and J.K. Dobbins is a good player. They're the best backfield in the NFL.
Gus Edwards is averaging 7.2 yards per carry.
Yeah, they have, and Gus Edwards is there.
Dobbins is averaging 7.6 yards per carry. Jackson's averaging 5.7, and Ingram, who's got the second most attempts behind Jackson, is averaging 4.4 yards per carry, which, by the way, is a pretty damn good average.
Let's call it a really, really good average.
Yeah.
But if you can stop the run a little bit, you can. Lamar Jackson's getting sacked, man.
Yes.
In sacks per pass attempt, he's almost at 13%. 13%. Other than, I think, Deshaun Watson, he's been sacked more times per pass attempt by a large margin. Like the average across the league is like 6 at best.
Right.
Right? The average around 6 at best. Aaron Rodgers is sacked 2% per dropback. So, yeah, you can stop the run a little bit and get after him. It's huge. I think having no Chase Young really will impact this game. It's crazy. We're 4 games in, and we're talking about a rookie.
Right.
But having no Chase Young in some of these situations is going to be huge, because you got to change your rush. You got to change the way you're getting after it. Having no Ionitis is going to be huge. I think that's why the line shot up so much this week, and that's why it's 14 instead of 10.
It rarely jumps up because of a defensive player, Cooley.
Well, yeah, but
rarely.
Two of your best players on your team.
I get it. I just
and those are the two players that would change the game for you.
Yeah, I'm just telling you that the line doesn't jump. It was 13. It went down to 12. Now it's back to 14. It's just sharp money right now. Look, the sharp money might be there because they realize the significance of Chase Young, but an odds maker isn't going to increase the line because Chase Young is out. Quarterbacks do that, and real, truly elite players do it. I don't think anybody's viewing Chase Young at this point as truly elite, even though I think, you know, some of us believe that that's where he's headed. Yeah.
Washington wins if they score when they get in the red zone. That was critical for them in the Philadelphia game, and that's what gave them a chance to win the ball game. They've made mistakes in the last couple games down in the red zone. They haven't finished drives. If they can score in the red zone, I think they have a pretty good opportunity. That's going to be massive. Baltimore is actually not the best in the red zone on defense. They give up a score 83% of the time. So, and they don't give up a ton of points. They don't give up a bunch of big plays. They're stout on defense. But you get down in the red zone, or you get a pick, or you get a turnover, and you're inside. And let's call it even inside the 30. If they get inside the 30 or the 35, it's must score. And inside the 25, it's must score touchdown. That to me, they have to find a way offensively to score at least 17 points.
Do you know,
you score less than 17 on offense, which means you're not scoring touchdowns down there. I don't think you can win.
It's interesting. Do you know that Washington's 11th in the league in red zone offense right now in terms of touchdowns in the red zone? They're 11th in the league right now. And I'm looking up Baltimore's red zone defense. Baltimore's red zone defense right now is 30th in the league. Interesting. You just hit on something I didn't even think about. That's a matchup, at least through 3 weeks, of a strength versus a weakness. Now, I look at Baltimore's defense, and I would bet that Kansas City, even though they scored from distance in that game on Monday night, I'd have to go back and look again to see what Kansas City was in the red zone. But Washington's actually been pretty good in the red zone offensively. The Chiefs on Monday night in the red zone were 3-for-3. Yeah, so the Chiefs were 3-for-3 against the Ravens. So Ravens are 30th in red zone defense, and Washington's 11th in red zone offense.
Washington changes a lot of the numbers in three games for your defense when you play Kansas City. You know, plays out? They're like, they're middle of the pack in a lot of defensive categories, but Kansas City put up a boatload of yards and points.
Yeah, just like your defensive numbers would be pretty good if you had Washington as one of your first three opponents. That leads me to this. Washington beats Baltimore if they shorten the game. And when I say shorten the game, you know what it means, but I'm going to add something to this, because they need the best defense often is a really good offense and a ball control offense. And I don't know the best way for them to control the ball. I have a feeling Haskins is going to have to make some throws in this game. But Washington right now is dead last in average yards per drive. They're averaging 23.27 yards per offensive drive, 32nd in the league, and it's actually not even close. The Jets are 31st in the league, and they're averaging 2.5 yards more per drive. That's big statistically. So Washington is not moving the football. You know, the points have come on short fields. Their average starting field position has been pretty good. And we remember from the Philadelphia game, they had multiple drives start in Philadelphia territory. They have to possess the ball more. They have to move the football and keep it away from Lamar Jackson as much as they can. You know, not to mention that more yards per drive gives, you know, increases the possibility of it at least reaching scoring position. But they have to be better in this area. You know, they are 31st in plays per drive, 32nd in drives per drive, and they are 30th in time of possession. So they really, I think, have to shorten the game with the ball in their hands. I think their best way to do it against Baltimore isn't going to be to run the football against the Ravens. I think that's difficult, even though Cleveland did it to a certain degree. Houston did not do it. I think Dwayne's going to have to make some plays, and they're going to have to figure out a way to keep the ball. What's your next one?
Well, in part to that, it's like Terry McLaurin's averaging almost
yards after catch.
12 yards after catch.
Right.
Let's get the ball in the hands of the receivers and get them going. I mean, Sims Jr., I think, has been completely underused on offense. And clearly someone would tell me why if they were in that building, because there's an obvious reason. I mean, he'd be playing more, catching more balls.
Well, he's been hurt, and he hasn't practiced this week. And last week he was limited in practice for a few days. So that may be part of the reason.
I mean, that may be part of the reason for sure. But you know, even early on, he didn't have nearly as many touches as I would have expected. He got a lot of hype going into this season.
You're right.
For a guy that played well for five games last year. I didn't think it was wrong, but they didn't use him early. He hasn't been an impact. Who else is getting yards? Like McKissick. Okay, you got to run the – you said you don't have to run the ball. The Redskins win if they can run the ball. Not the Redskins.
I didn't say they shouldn't run the ball. I'm just not sure they're going to have a success against Baltimore.
I would agree.
Running the ball.
Baltimore's still giving up 4 yards a carry.
Yeah.
You got to remain resilient with your run calls. You're going to have to stay balanced, and you're going to have to be able to run the ball, and you're going to have to be able to run the ball and gain yards. I think their offensive line's done a pretty good job through the first 3 weeks.
I know you
did. In running the ball, I think they've done a pretty good job. Now, they're only averaging like 3 yards per carry, but they've taken some negative carries and they haven't run the ball as much as they need to. They've had more 4 and 5 yard runs than I would have expected them to this year. 9, 8, 9, 10 yard runs. Like Gibson and McKissick are doing a pretty good job. To me, both of those guys need 15 touches in the game. Well, at least between the two of them, at least 30 touches. And I'm guessing you'd be around at least 12 runs apiece if you want to win this game. And it might be more. But if you want to shorten the game, you got to be able to run the ball a little bit. And maybe even in third down situations, don't be afraid to run the ball on 3rd and 4. Because we haven't been converting those.
Have you watched – I forget how you evaluated Patrick Queen, the linebacker from LSU, Baltimore's first-round pick, because he's played very well as one of their inside linebackers. Do you remember your evaluation of Patrick Queen?
I really liked Patrick McQueen because I thought he had a lot of speed.
Yeah.
I thought he can – I like that. I mean, that was a good defense for them last year. As far as it goes this year, I don't think he's played very well for Baltimore.
Really?
No, I think he's been exposed. I think people have been able to throw behind him. I think he's been okay.
I watched some of that Houston game, and he was a tackling machine.
Yeah, there are times when he tackles well, but in coverage, he's really struggled this year. That's indicative of a lot of young linebackers. But I said this against Arizona. You're going to have to create matchups in the pass game against linebackers. I just don't know if we have the players to do that.
Last thing for me, Washington beats Baltimore. Obviously, this is, you know, typical keys to the game cliche. They have to be +2 or better against the Ravens to even have a chance. If they do what they did Sunday against the Browns, there's no chance they're going to be up 20-17 in the fourth quarter with two to three turnovers at that point and down in that category. It's 44-6 if they are minus five in the turnover margin. They've got to be plus two or better. I think this is one of those games that if you don't get some breaks, not only with turnovers for short fields, as you said, a defensive score would be great, but you need a couple of those phantom penalties that take a first and 10, 16-yard run and make it first and 20 instead, which makes it harder to overcome and move the sticks and keep the ball. You're going to need at least one or two of those. This is a big chore. Baltimore is the biggest favorite of any NFL team so far through four weeks in the season, and there's a reason for it. I see plus two, and then you need one or two of those. Really, he was holding against them that sets up second and 20 instead of, you know, a first down play. Yeah,
no doubt, you're going to need some calls.
Yeah,
you're going to need some luck in this game.
Yeah, you're going to need some luck in this game.
You're going to need some luck in this ballgame. They're outmatched.
What else do you have? Washington beats Baltimore if?
It's really hard for me to play this game this week with you.
Why?
Because they're not going to win.
Imagine if they did, though. Imagine
it'd be fun.
Imagine if Monday we are talking about a shocking upset win over Baltimore. Just play along here for a second, because it's not going to happen. I don't think it'll happen. But if it did, and these things do happen in the NFL every once in a while. In fact, they happen more than just every once in a while. And I think I told you this on Wednesday. I think this team is much more capable than any team in the last couple of years for this franchise of pulling off, you know, something big and totally unexpected. If it happened, first of all, our fan base would lose its collective mind. Secondly, the national guys would start talking about Washington being a legitimate contender in the NFC East, especially if Dwayne played well. And by the way, it'd be impossible for them to beat the Ravens without him playing well, unless the Ravens just completely soil themselves for 60 minutes.
So there you go. There's our biggest Washington wins if. Washington wins if the little media storm this week with the coaches. Because remember last week it was, well, there's a lot of noise. We hear all the noise, blah, 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 blah. Shut up, Chris Cooley. Changed from we hear all the noise to we'll make the noise. And maybe in this week he hears it, starts hot. They get the ball, opening possession. He goes 4-for-4. They go down the field. They score a touchdown. Baltimore turns it over early. And you get up 14-0. And you're like, oh, here we go. Here we go. And Dwayne stays hot throughout the game. Washington wins if Dwayne gets hot and stays hot and plays confident. It makes throws.
Okay, let me amend that from my standpoint. Washington has a chance to win if Dwayne has three of those drives where he's hot, like he did against Arizona, like he did against Cleveland, where he's got 3 to 4 drives where he really executes. Now, the other drives have
points on offense theory.
Yeah, the other drives have to end in punt, not turnover. Let me make that clear, too. But if he has, you know, 3 to 4 of those, you know, empty set, quick game, slants, big plays, and, you know, a couple of touchdown throws in the red zone, and he doesn't fall apart with turnovers on the other drives. They end up with punts on the others, or maybe a fourth down miss or something, turnover, you know, in Baltimore territory, then they've got a shot. They would be in the game. And you know what, Cooley, through three games, he's had three drives in each of these games where he's looked more than competent.
Yeah, he needs 6 of those drives.
Why 6? Because you said if we get a defensive touchdown, they just need 17 points. That would be three.
Well, I think that you need 3 other drives where you take the ball to midfield, or you have a 30-yard drive and you get close to field goal range. And yet,
rather
maybe
than 3
and a half
punts. Yeah. True.
But, you can't have 3 and out punts and give Baltimore the ball in good field position. He needs more than 3 competent drives against this team.
All right, we will make predictions. Do you have another Washington wins if? Did you have anything else on this game?
No, I think we did a pretty good job.
I think we covered it. We'll save our predictions for a little bit down the road here. I want to get to my smell test right after this word from one of our sponsors.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kevin looks where the John Q. Public is putting their cash and does the opposite. It's time for the smell test.
All right, the smell test this week, if you even want it, for those of you that have been following it and wagering based on the recommendations, I'm going to give it to you, and I've got a lot of plays this week. And I mentioned earlier in the radio show, Cooley, that there's a thing in gambling called chase mode, and it's really a bad thing, but everybody that has ever gambled has experienced chase mode, which is you're on a losing streak, and you just start chasing. You know, you start chasing with bets that you normally wouldn't make. It's a Monday nighter and you're down a bunch of money and you got to settle up on Tuesday and you don't even like the game, but you bet it anyway. And you're chasing that lost money. And that's really when things get ugly as a gambler. Anyone will tell you that. I don't feel like I'm in chase mode on, you know, October 2nd. I'm 6-14-2 on the year. It's a terrible start to the year. I was 4-5 last week, which was the best weekend of the year so far that got me to 6-14-2, 8 games under .500. I will remind everybody that I was 26 games above .500 mid-October last year and ended up losing for the year. So, you know, these things come in waves, but someone's going to, I guarantee you, will send me a tweet that will say, "Oh my God, Sheehan, you're in chase mode. I mean, you gave out how many games? You gave out 12 games this week. You're in chase mode after getting your ass kicked for the first month of the season." No, these are actually games that I like that fit the smell test contrarian, you know, formula of very much anti-public plays along with some sharp money to back it up. Let's start with Saturday.
Hold on 1 second, though. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
You don't stop doubling down on 11.
No, you do. Exactly. That's a much better way to put it.
Double down on 11. You don't start staying on 16s.
No.
You play the odds. You play the percentages. I know you as, and I've been listening to this forever.
You have been listening to it for several years now. Yes.
You don't quit playing. I know you well enough to know that if there were only 3 games to play, you would play 3 games. If there are 12, you would play 12. My only concern about the smell test today, I'm just going to lay it out there flat as could be. You told me you woke up at 2:30 and you're tired. And I'm just questioning, like, you've been on a bender. It's not just that people might think you're chasing. You've been up all night playing.
I did wake up very early this morning. I had a lot to do to get prepared for the radio show that I did not prepare for last night. And I woke up and I looked at my phone and I saw the breaking news on Trump and the First Lady with COVID-19. And so I turned the TV on, and then that was trouble. But I don't think that has anything to do with it because I finished the smell test last night.
Okay.
Okay. But by the way, your analogy is the exact analogy that Scott Van Pelt always gives with his, you know, winners that he does on his show, which is you don't stop doubling down on 11. You know, you don't stop. You don't all of a sudden stop hitting 16 against a 9. You just can't do that. You got to play the right way. If you play the right way and you trust in your philosophy and your system, it will eventually, you know, turn around and turn in the right direction. Now, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to win But as I've mentioned before, 10 out of 14 years have been winning years. All right, let's get started here because I got a lot of games to get through. Let's start tomorrow. West Virginia plays Baylor in Morgantown. West Virginia was terrible last week against Oklahoma State. They couldn't move the football, couldn't score. Baylor in their first game blew out Kansas 47-14. The number is 2.5. The public loves Baylor. Give me the Mountaineers plus 2.5. Buy the half point to get it to plus 3. All right. But I'm playing the covers Friday lines, and it's 2.5. TCU is playing Texas. One of the most exciting games of the football season so far was last week when Texas rallied from 15 down, calling timeouts on defense, and beat Texas Tech 63-56 in overtime. I mean, it was a classic last week. TCU gave up a lot of points. Gary Patterson, such a great defensive mind, but their defense looked soft. And so people think Texas that could roll up another 60-plus against TCU. The line opened at 13. It's down to 11.5. There's a lot of sharp money on the Horned Frogs. I'll take TCU plus the 11.5. Texas Tech was on the wrong side of that comeback against Kansas last week, giving up that 15-point lead late and losing in overtime 63-56. They are playing the team that upset Oklahoma last week, Kansas State. Kansas State's laying a very short number at home against Texas Tech. It's minus 2.5. Let down for K-State. Texas Tech bounces back. I like Texas Tech plus the 2.5. They are an anti-public play, and there is major sharp money on Texas Tech. They're a very good offensive football team. Give me Texas Tech plus the 2.5 again by the half point there. Now, Ole Miss last week really rolled up some points against Florida. I mean, I think Kyle Trask is going to be one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy. He's one of those quarterbacks, Cooley, I picked out early to say that's a future pro. When he got in for Felipe Franks last year in Florida as the third stringer, eventually he got in, and then he just looked like a pro. Like, he looks like the guy, you know, Sean Mannion, the guy that I really liked at Oregon State who backs up Kirk in Minnesota.
Yep.
I think he's going to be a pro somewhere one day, a starter one somewhere one day. Kyle Trask plays a lot like Mannion did in college. He's a drop-back guy, but he's a good, subtle guy at extending plays. He threw 6 touchdown passes last week against Ole Miss. With that said, Ole Miss scored 35 against Florida's defense. They are catching 6 in the Commonwealth of Kentucky tomorrow. The public loves Kentucky, who played Auburn tough in week 1 and was ranked last week. I like Ole Miss plus the 6 in that one. One more college game, then we'll move to the pro board. Iowa State is the team that beat TCU last week by rolling up 37 points. They play Oklahoma. Oklahoma had the loss, the big upset loss to K-State. Oklahoma opened at minus 10. It's down to 7. Massive sharp money on Iowa State. This is why I think people like Iowa State. Iowa State can score, and I think everybody's looked at Oklahoma's defense and says it is a terrible defense for a second straight year, and they don't have Jalen Hurts, or they don't have Kyler Murray at quarterback. I like Iowa State plus the 7. I think Oklahoma's in for a much more difficult year than people thought before they opened up as the third-ranked team in the country last week. Let's go to Sunday, where, Cooley, I don't know if this has ever happened with me in the smell test. I'm giving out the same team for a fourth consecutive week, the Detroit Lions. They were a winner for me last week at Arizona. They're catching 4.5 in the Superdome against the Saints, and they're the right side. The public loves the Saints, think they will bounce back off their loss to Green Bay. I think Mike Williams is back. I think Detroit's a good team. Detroit should have won week 1 against Chicago. They blew the 23-6 lead. They had the lead, a 2-score lead against Green Bay before Aaron Rodgers got hot. I like Detroit plus the 4.5 Sunday against the Saints. The Panthers, Cooley, I think are a better team than people are believing. No McCaffrey last week. They went in and they beat the Chargers. I think Matt Rhule, Joe Brady, and company are going to do a good job. I've always been a Bridgewater fan. He's been inconsistent. They're catching a very short number at home against Arizona, and there is sharp money on Carolina. I'll take the Panthers plus 3.5 against the Cardinals. I gave out the Vikings last week as a plus 3 home dog against Tennessee. They very easily could have won the game outright. Kirk Cousins, by the way, leads the league in air yards attempted and air yards on completion. So Mr. Checkdown, for all you Kirk people, he's number one in both of those categories. He is airing the ball out and throwing it deep this year to the likes of Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. The problem is the Viking defense. Will it hold up against Houston, especially with a shortened practice week for Minnesota? The public doesn't think so. They're all over Houston. I'll take the Vikings +3.5, hopefully get them for a second straight week. This next one is dicey, but the public's all over Cincinnati laying 3 at home against Jacksonville. Why? Well, they tied Philadelphia last week. They took Cleveland to the brink with Burrow's 61, attempts on that Thursday night game, 35-30. They nearly beat the Chargers in their opener. And the Bengals are playing the Jags. I think the Jags are a capable team. I'll take the Jags plus the 3. They've got the 11-day break, too, leading up to this because they played the Thursday night game a week ago against the Dolphins. Speaking of the Dolphins, just take them, +6 at home against Seattle. That is the second biggest public play of the day, Seattle. The Dolphins +6 at home against the Seahawks. I like the Browns +4.5 against Dallas. A lot of public action on Dallas. And I like the Raiders +3 against the Bills. There's a ton of action on the Bills. Let me just mention this. I nearly gave out Washington +14. There is a lot of public action on Baltimore, a ton. There's also some sharp action on Baltimore as well. All right, recapping. West Virginia +2.5, TCU +11.5, Texas Tech +2.5, Ole Miss +6, Iowa State +7 on Saturday. On Sunday, the Lions +4.5, the Panthers +3.5, the Vikings +3.5, the Jags +3, the Dolphins +6, the Browns +4.5, and the Raiders +3. The smell test brought to you by MyBookie. If you're looking for a place to play these wagers, go to MyBookie.ag. By the way, they've got a great contest going right now. It's the $100,000 Super Contest. It only costs you a $10 entry. They're giving away $5,000 in cash prizes every 4 weeks as well. You can sign up at MyBookie.ag, and when you do, use my promo code KevinDC to claim your 100% deposit match all the way up to $1,000. That means if you put $100 in, they'll give you another $100. It's an easy way to jumpstart your bankroll. MyBookie.ag, you can trust their lines, their pricing, and you'll get paid if you win. All right, Cooley, what's your lock of the week?
It's amazing. You just pretty much took every NFL game, which I love.
I took a lot of NFL games.
You're playing two hands. You're playing three hands at the casino.
I'm not a three hand player. I have played two hands many times, but I don't like to play two hands. I like to play one hand and be at a table with a lot of fun people. That's what I like. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think that it's 4 a.m. and there's just not a lot of people around.
It's just me. It's just me and well, I was going to say something that probably would have been inappropriate, but a very nice and capable dealer, and we're having a nice conversation, and she's sharing with me, you're playing well, and you're on a roll, and hopefully I'm getting my money back, and then giving her a big tip at the end of it, right?
It's just that there's glass between you and she's wearing a mask and you understand about every fourth word she said, but you're nodding like, uh-huh.
I haven't done the glass thing, but you did.
I played blackjack last weekend in Riverton, Wyoming.
Oh boy.
And we had the glass in one of our dealers, great dude wearing a mask, and he's talking the whole time. He seems so nice. And for a while I'd lean all the way up to the glass, like, and he'd kind of lift his mask so he could tell me what he was trying to tell me. But then he'd keep talking. I'm like, I don't even hear a little bit. You're on mute.
Oh, man. Well.
So you and that very nice dealer are on mute, nodding between masks.
Yeah. Well, you explained what I was going to get to, which is sometimes there is a bit of a language barrier. When you're at a card table playing blackjack and it's just you and it's 4 a.m. and instead of getting a 15th beer, you actually then are ordering coffee. you know, you develop a bit of a rapport. And you know, the rapport is the game and how you're playing and what's going on in the casino. And sometimes, like, when you're in town for a big fight, the dealer wants to know if you're in town for the big fight and what you think of the big fight. Because when there's a big fight in Vegas, Cooley, everybody and every dealer and every pit boss and every marketing rep, they're all talking about the fight. And they all want to know what you think of the fight. So there you go. And it's 4 a.m. and I'm hoping to just get on a bit of a roll and then cash out, get a few hours of sleep, and be back down for the 1 o'clock kicks, which of course would be 10 a.m., you know, Bellagio or Wynn or MGM or Mandalay Bay sportsbook time. All right, let's get your lock of the week.
This is one of these weeks for me where it's, I like a lot of the plays. I think that there's a lot of interesting lines this week, but like, it's hard for a lock of the week. Like, I like Chicago +2.5.
I do too.
Against Indy. Indy's been awesome. Chicago's in turmoil, but somehow they found ways in two games to have 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win games that they should have lost, not just come back, but to win games. But it's like, I don't know. What's Nick Foles going to be? Are they way better with Nick Foles? I don't know. I like the Rams a lot against the Giants, -13. The Giants are horrible. I watched Sean undress Buffalo's defense. Now, they got down 28-3, but it was the second half where he just undressed the Bills. Pulled her pants down, spanked. and you're like, man, he's got it going.
Yeah.
I like New England in the Steve Zabin theory that if you ever get the Patriots on sale, that you should take the Patriots. They're way on sale this week, but to play in the Chiefs.
I like the Patriots too. By the way, everything you're mentioning were leans for, like, Chicago. I was very close, but the action was split. I really like New England personally, but the action sort of split there, so it didn't really fit the criteria. But go ahead.
But here's the game I'm going to go with, and I like all those games. And if I were doing this, I'd
actually
play all
don't
the
like
games.
The Rams. By the way, you couldn't get me to lay 13.
It's a heavy public lean.
Yes, it is.
There's no question about that. The game I like this week for my lock of the week is Green Bay -7. I know it's a public play, but Atlanta can't stop anybody. And Matt Ryan's turned it over a little bit, and I like Green Bay's defense. I don't see how they're stopping Aaron Rodgers. To me, I think Green Bay wins by 7 easy. Now, Atlanta might jump out and have a decent lead, but right now the way Green Bay's running the ball as well as the way they're throwing, they're playing true complement offense and with a very good defense who can get after the passer. I don't know if Julio Jones, who was banged up a little bit, is going to play. Do you know the deal on that?
Questionable. Questionable. He's on my fantasy team, so I've been keeping an eye on that.
My lock of the week is Green Bay in the Sunday nighter. Actually, that's Monday.
It's a Monday night game.
We'll say, you know what? Let's do this. Let's save that.
Okay.
And just because you don't like the Rams and you've been on
I'm a cooler right now.
You've been on the snide. I'm going to go with the Rams.
Okay. Laying 13. And then we'll talk about Monday because I failed to mention that I think I'm going to give out Atlanta plus the points on Monday night, but I want to wait until Monday to do it because I don't feel good about giving out Atlanta.
That line should be more.
It should be more, but Atlanta, because they're so capable of scoring, you know, whenever you bet a big dog, and, you know, in this day and age of NFL football, you know, anything 7 or higher than 7 is a sizable, you know, favorite. And if you're taking the points and you're taking the underdog, one of the things you always want to know when you're taking a bigger dog is that they have the capability of scoring points. And so that's why, you know, you'd feel safer with Atlanta and not feel good about the Giants, even though the Giants are a big anti-public play and you're going against that. But, you know, betting the Giants this week, you know, on a contrarian wager, it's painful because they can't score. And you just, whenever you take those big teams, you'd much rather have the big team that can't stop somebody, but is totally capable of hanging 28 on the board. because then the other team in a big, you know, 10-point plus thing's got to, you know, they're going to score 38 plus, and you always have a chance. By the way, I have something for you right after a word from a sponsor that I want to share with you, and we'll give our predictions on the Washington game as well, but it deals with over-under numbers this week. We'll do that and finish up the show right after this word from a sponsor. All right, we'll give you our Washington-Baltimore prediction here in a moment. But I can't remember if I said this to you on Wednesday or I said it to Tommy yesterday. I forget. But I mentioned that the over-unders this week, earlier in the week, I just, in looking at the initial lines, I said this may be the highest number of 55-plus over-unders in NFL history in a weekend. I've never seen it before. And I made the comment that this could be, in aggregate, the highest over-under number for all of these games in NFL history. And I've been looking for the data on this, and I just found it. Here it is from ESPN from earlier this morning, from ESPN Stats and Info, that the average over-under in week four right now is around 50. That would be the highest average weekly over-under in the past 35 seasons. So I knew intuitively that it was just too many numbers that were 54, 55 and higher. And there were other numbers that were already over 50 that it just seemed like I didn't feel like I had ever seen it. The lowest over-under number of the weekend was last night at 41, and it sailed over, you know, 37-28. You know, you had a 65-point game in a 41 over-under number. But, you know, the games that are super high this week, Detroit-New Orleans is at 54.5 right now. I'm looking at it. It was at 55. You've got Minnesota-Houston, it's at 54 now. That was also at 55. Seattle-Miami's at 55.5. That 54.5. That was at 55. Dallas-Cleveland's 56. New England-KC was actually higher than this earlier in the week. They're at 53 now. Green Bay-Atlanta's at 56.5. I haven't even mentioned Buffalo-Vegas at 52.5. Arizona, Carolina at 51. These are college, you know, over-under numbers. You're not into the 60s right now, but they're just outrageously high. So you have that. And Cooley, you know, scoring is up by an average of 5.4 yards per game. Did I talk to you about this already, or is this a new conversation?
We've not discussed this.
Okay, so a lot of people were posting the following as a reason. They said, well, penalties are down. Well, penalties being down don't necessarily mean or lead to increased scoring. In fact, when you get fewer penalties, typically you get faster moving games and sometimes fewer snaps, which actually more times than not would lead to a lower scoring game. Now, it depends on what the penalties are, right? If there's more PI, and there's more PI this year, DPI, defensive pass interference, but there's much less defensive holding. But anyway, here's the reason.
There's much less offensive holding, which would change scores.
Which would allow offenses, yes, to move the ball more. But at the same time, the clock's not stopping on a lot of these plays, and it's rolling, and so it's creating a faster game. Aaron Rodgers was on Mad Dog Radio on Tuesday. He makes a weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee show. AJ Hawk's on that show, a former teammate of Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers, I was listening to it on Tuesday, and Rodgers said the following. He said, "It's really weird, man, and it's a lot easier offensively this year without fans in the stands." He said, playing in Minnesota in week one and playing in New Orleans last Sunday night, it was just a massive difference in operating our offense. And he said the reason scoring's up more than any other reason is no fans. And the fans help defense. They don't help offense. They help the defense. They hurt the offense when you're on the road. And that was his reason for it.
No, I would understand that completely, which is why I like Washington even less, because there is going to be way less Baltimore fans in the stadium. And yeah, I know where the game's being played.
All right. Let's give a final score prediction with maybe a footnote if you have one.
My final score prediction is Baltimore 31, Washington 16, three field goals and a touchdown for the Washington football team. I think that Baltimore's too much early. They jump out to an early lead like teams have done against Washington. And it's not, and you're thinking about watching other games at 1 o'clock.
I've got Baltimore 27, Washington 17, and the footnote here is that a very good defensive coordinator, Don Martindale, in Baltimore, really confuses a quarterback making his 11th start, and that the conversation next week is once again on Dwayne. Now, they score 17 points, and he has a couple of drives here and there, but ultimately, he doesn't do enough, and he'll probably make a mistake or two, and we're having this conversation again. And by the way, in a different context now, after what Ron Rivera and or what was leaked to J.P. Finley about, you know, perhaps, you know, he better get his act in order, or a change could be more imminent than maybe we thought in previous days. 27-17, I'm going to take the home team on the cover. It might be a backdoor cover. It might be a late Dwayne to Inman, you know, with 13 seconds left to make it 27-17.
And you're betting on Rivera. He's going to keep playing this week.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Have a good weekend, everybody. Cooley, thanks. We'll be back Monday to recap the game.